The Offside Rule, We Get It, is brought to you by Continental Tires.
Hello there and welcome to the Offside Rule podcast, We Get It. I've been away for a couple of weeks, but Hayley McQueen, myself, it's very weird saying my own name in a podcast, I'm back. That's right, girls.
When you went away, did you turn into Zlatan Ibrahimovic?
I am Hayley.
Do you know, it's so lovely to have you back. We've missed you. You've been in Miami. You've been helping your parents move house. You've been all over the shop, but you're back.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. Kate Borsay, who, of course, is one of the regular trios, and Lindsay Hooper as well.
You know what? I think it's my turn to go away next.
No, it isn't.
Oh, Kate's like, no. Kate knows she's got a little trip on the horizon. I might try and beat you.
Well, what have we got coming up for you on the Offside Rule podcast, brought to you by Continental Tires, getting you to the game safely? Well, so much to talk about. We can talk about what we've been up to for the last few weeks. Kate has been frantically studying, working, whilst kind of juggling, not kind of, but juggling motherhood as well. Kind of, yeah.
It actually is kind of, mostly, trying to.
Lindsay's had some personal video messages delivered to herself, and I've been sunning myself in Miami. But I tell you what.
So dodgy.
No, it's not dodgy. We'll tell you about it in a moment. Anyway, Manchester United and a certain young man making his debut, which has sparked one of the topics we're going to talk about today. We're also going to be chatting goal celebrations. Mikel Antonio, apparently a big fan of The Simpsons. I didn't think these youngsters were into The Simpsons. I thought that was kind of an our generation thing, but apparently not. Channeling his Homer Simpson. Of course, he scored a goal against Sunderland, and he decided that this Homer Simpson celebration was going to be something that he would do if he scored, and he did, and we saw it, and it was all a bit weird.
He's not very of the moment, though, is he? Because really, if you were going to be topical, you'd go for Family Guy.
There was also the Capital One Cup. It went to extra time in the final. No golden goal, which has got us thinking about examples of famous games that were settled by a golden goal. I'm sure some people might have wanted it to go to golden goal, perhaps less cruel than a penalty shootout, or maybe actually not just as exciting to watch a load of defensive football for quite some time. But you were there at the cup final, weren't you, Lindsay?
Yeah.
I mean, Kate, Lindsay, you weren't there. She was there in spirit.
I was there, and I'm not a big fan of the golden goal, and I'm glad that they were abolished when they were by FIFA. Stupid idea. Although Sepp Blatter was planning to bring them back. Again, not a great move. I'm glad it wasn't golden goal. But it was really painful.
Hi, I'm Matt Letissier, and you're listening to The Offside Rule, three girls talking about football.
But let's start with ones to watch, because it really was a dream debut. Roy the Rovers stuff. Okay, I'm using all the cliches there, but I tell you what, Manchester United in European competition unleashed Marcus Rashford. People were like, who? And he scores two goals. And then what happens? Well, of course, he keeps his place in the team, doesn't he?
I like that.
Starts in the Premier League at the weekend. Louis van Gaal has finally got it. Mm. He finally understands the Manchester United way. And he scores another two goals. It really was brilliant stuff. So he, of course, has been bigged up. But we want to maybe look at some of the other players who are coming through the ranks at their clubs this season. They may have made their debut in seasons past, but let's focus on those who have had the spotlight shone on them this season and ones to watch going forward. They might not be staying at their clubs, but how do you think they might fare for maybe call-ups for internationals? Hopefully if they're English, and that might happen as well. Let's just ask you both who you've had your eye on and who you think we might see a heck of a lot more in the future of.
Before I get into that, can I name drop? Am I allowed to do this? There is a raised eyebrow occasionally when I do this, but because we're allowing you to have a Manchester United talk, I think we'll allow this one, seeing as Marcus Rashford's so good. I was chatting to Danny Welbeck earlier today, and he was part of Fletcher Moss and then went on to Manchester United Academy, which is where so many players were spurned. But we don't need me to fill you in on this. Danny Welbeck was one of them. He knows through his brother, he was telling me, he knows Marcus Rashford quite well, and a couple of times he's given him advice. So it's great to see young players coming through. So I thought I would start that off, because Marcus Rashford, it has been sensational watching him getting four goals. I mean, if he stopped now, four goals in two games, pretty impressive stuff, isn't it? And he's got a new contract as well off the back of it, which that's caused a lot of discussion as to whether a teenager should be getting that much money. And as the mum of the group, would you put it in a trust fund?
I think I probably would, actually, or I'd certainly make sure that he didn't have the whole lot in his bank account at once. I'm sure the club will make sure of that as well, and there'll be people advising him there. I guess what concerns me about that is that we've seen it before with players. OK, he was a little bit older, but players like Andros Townsend, who have this excellent burst and then don't get to fulfil it. And particularly in a team like Manchester United, you know, you could argue that Andros Townsend perhaps had more chances at Spurs than Marcus Rashford will have at Manchester United. Not only are Manchester United possibly going to have a new manager soon, although I think the tide is turning in his favour, but not only could there be a new manager there, there are also going to be players, because something's got to change at that club. So if the manager doesn't go, you're going to get new players. If the manager goes, you're going to get new players anyway. So he's going to find himself in kind of no man's land soon. And that concerns me a little bit.
What's quite freakish about it is this has already happened already. Martial comes in, scores quite a few goals, important goals, is young, is on this amazing contract. It's like all over again, but with even younger. But anyway, I'm going to up the age for my answers for this topic. We're going to go to 24, the ripe old age of 24, both of my examples, as we roll our eyes. Let's start with Jordi Clasie, because Ronald Koeman giving him a little bit more of an outing of late. Let's say 2016 has certainly been his year so far, because he has actually began quite a lot of the games where Southampton have gone on this brilliant run since the calendar year turned and has escalated and elevated Southampton up the table. Good technical midfielder, has been at the club for a couple of years, came from the Netherlands, struggled admittedly with adjusting to life in the Premier League. Admitted that in recent interviews since he started finding his form.
I suppose it must be nice then to have Koeman there, because he's got some sort of similarity. Even if it's a simple language thing.
It wasn't just that, it was adjusting to having a very bad injury. He's had that to deal with. But he is now getting into what he's calling the best form of his life. He believes he's getting close to that. I've seen some brilliant displays from him. So I'm going to tip him as someone to watch, if not for the end of this season, certainly for next season. And part of the reason I'm doing that is I'm expecting another mass exodus at Southampton in the summer transfer window. So when the likes of Wanyama move on, I think there will be an opportunity in midfield for him to stake his place. Another player I'm going to pick out who's in his debut season in the Premier League, not made much of it so far, unfortunately for horrific injury, is a player at Bournemouth, Callum Wilson. Another 24-year-old. And what a way to start a season. 5 Premier League goals in 7 games. Yeah. Then you get crocked. You're out in the sidelines for quite a while, getting very down about it. He says his family have kept him alive. He watches replays of his 5 goals to keep him going and give him inspiration. He ruptured an anterior cruciate ligament. One of the worst ones you can do. That was against Stoke. So he's hoping to return by April. And you know what? My instinct with this player is that I think he's going to slot straight back in. He showed that he was very much equipped for Premier League life, and I think he'll go straight back in there, a little bit like how Danny Welbeck has in terms of coming back from an injury and scoring again. I think Callum Wilson, there's more goals to come from him before the end of the season.
Well, this topic was sparked by Marcus Rashford and his show-stealing kind of debut against Arsenal. And I'm going to pick out another player who made his debut against Arsenal. OK, United-Arsenal is a big game, but West Ham-Arsenal, a huge game as well, of course, with the London rivalry there. And a youngster by the name of Reece Oxford. He was given his debut against Arsenal and put in a performance, you'd have to say, beyond his years. Experienced and pretty much, as the headline said, had Mesut Ozil in his back pocket. And I think if West Ham can keep hold of him, what a catch he will be. However, he's a youth international, very versatile. He can play in midfield or at centre-back as well, being touted as one of the best emerging young talents in the country. But at 16 years old, they're being very, very careful with him. He's made a handful of appearances for West Ham, but he's only been on the losing side, in fact, in one game. He's played in the Europa League, he's played in the FA Cup, and he's also played in 4 Premier League games as well, obviously against Arsenal with his debut, Leicester as well. A huge game to play against the team who were topping the table and the stars of the show as far as teams go in the Premier League. That was the only game that he was on the losing side to. And he played in the game against Liverpool, you might remember as well, Kate, and Villa. They actually only managed to take 1 point from Villa. Who'd have thought that?
He nearly went on loan, didn't he, to Charlton in January, actually. Interesting that fell through. And again, you know, I think he, as a player, needs to probably pin down his position fairly soon. Otherwise, his versatility could be his biggest downfall, which is going to link to one of my answers.
Well, this is where what you point out is so crucial. It's how the clubs handle these players, because I think the handling of them at this age is going to be what it's all about. You do that wrong as a West Ham United, or whether you're a Manchester United, and these players, they will go off. I think a little bit, I know that he wasn't quite as young as this, but Paul Pogba is a great example, isn't it, of United getting that wrong. We need to make sure that these players, yes, that they're protected to a degree, but you still need to give them game time, because otherwise they're going to want to go elsewhere. And it's a difficult balance to strike.
It's highlighting something else at the moment, West Ham, and the fact that they're giving youngsters a chance. And actually, it's kind of paying off for them. You've got Mikel Antonio. I know he's not as young as Reece Oxford, who is now the club's youngest ever player, or Joshua Cullen either, but they were given their debuts against really big games. So Reece was in the Premier League against Arsenal. Also in the Premier League, Josh Cullen, okay, he's 19 years old, but his debut was against Liverpool. And then you had Mikel Antonio as well, having to take on Manchester City back in September. And there's a really great initiative going on with the Premier League too. All top flight homegrown players who make the debut in the Premier League will be given a Premier League debut football. So there's a great piece on the Premier League with Reece Oxford very proudly having this ball encased in glass to remind him of the day that he made his debut, which might be a nice reminder if you have that on your mantelpiece, just to remind you of that moment and how you kick on from there and go on to greatness while still hopefully keeping your feet on the ground.
And if you hit hard times 70 years later, eBay is calling.
Be really interesting, actually, to see from that list of players, and it's a fairly lengthy list too, of players who've made their Premier League debuts. Okay, there's a whole Bournemouth team there, because of course Bournemouth have come up from the Championship, same with Watford too, but it'd be really interesting to look at that list in a couple of years' time and look at where those players went to and what's happened to them. I've picked out a couple of teenagers, actually. I wanted to look at players that we might not have seen a huge amount of, but there's definitely some promising things happening for them. Alex Iwobi at Arsenal, my main concern. Obviously Arsenal churn out so many good youngsters. I worked at the TV station there, gosh, about 3 or 4 years ago now, maybe even longer. And it's really interesting how many of those really famous youth team players, because there was quite a few at that time, haven't gone on to achieve anything at Arsenal. It's such a small percentage, isn't it? But I'm going to pick out Alex Iwobi. He's 19. He's actually the nephew of JJ Okocha. There's a nice little bit of trivia for you. He made his competitive debut for the club in the League Cup against Sheffield Wednesday back in October, made his Premier League debut 4 days later in a win against Swansea City. This is what I don't like about it, is that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is getting a lot of pelters at the moment. And when we talk about someone's versatility perhaps being their biggest downfall, and how maybe nailing a position or nailing more of a position than Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's had the last season or so might be the way to go, he's been compared to Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, and people are asking, well, you know, should Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain still be at the club when we've got someone like Alex Iwobi there? That's not a good thing to do within a team. You know, poor Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is still a good player to be, you know, effectively replaced by some newspapers by a 19-year-old who's made 10 appearances or something for the club is just not a good thing to do.
Well, if that is going to be the case, there's a 6 to 8 week window, which has been confirmed today, that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's going to be out for. Doesn't need surgery, which is the good news, but there is a little period of time there where he could perhaps fill in.
There is, and I completely applaud that, but I don't like it when they're marked off against each other, players. I just don't think it's fair.
That's football.
No, but I don't think it's fair when a 19-year-old who's made 10 appearances is being speculated in a newspaper as to whether he would be better. There was even a vote, I think, you know, should Arsenal go with this player instead of Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain? Okay, they've not got much choice now, but I just think it's the wrong way to go about things. Iwobi's known for his power and pace. Very composed on the ball as well. You know, typical Arsenal product. He's good. He's very good. But it's what happens to it next. Quick mention as well from a Liverpool fans' point of view of Jordan Rossiter. Liverpool fans will know about Jordan. Fans of other clubs perhaps too, particularly if you watch the youth teams. He's captained Liverpool at under-18 and under-21 level. He's been lauded for a little bit of time as the new Stevie G or the new Jordan Henderson. He's had some lovely things said about him by Mark Lawrence and Robbie Fowler and a few other fans. He made his debut last season, actually, in the Capital One Cup, but made his Premier League debut this season against Arsenal under Brendan Rodgers. He picked up a hamstring injury, not for Liverpool, but whilst playing for England under-19s. And Klopp has come out and said that he thinks it was outrageous that this young player has been made to play three international, full-length international games in a period of 6 days. Who knows about that one? But look, he is an exciting player. Could he be a future Liverpool captain? Absolutely so. Could he be as dominant as Stevie G and potentially as Jordan Henderson's going to be? Yes, he's definitely one to look out for, Jordan Rossiter. Local lad as well, which, of course, always pleases me.
Follow us on Twitter at Offside Rule Pod and like our page on Facebook. Simply type in the Offside Rule We Get It. There's only one of us.
So let's now talk about famous goal celebrations over the years. It can be for any country, any team, anywhere, anytime. There have been some monumental ones. I took to Twitter to ask some of the people who tweet us via the Offside Rule podcast and by my own personal Twitter as well to find out the first thing that comes to their mind when they think of goal celebrations. I've had some good suggestions. Yeah, so I'll get to that in a moment. But obviously it was inspired by Mikel Antonio and the fact that he was inspired by Homer Simpson, which is just a bit weird to me. Not quite as cool as Ravanelli lifting his shirt over his head. Celebration of shirt over the head was one of my personal favourites.
Who was the player who took his shirt off and couldn't get his shirt back on again?
Probably Balotelli, probably.
Yeah, who it was, but yeah, he took his shirt off and couldn't get back on again. Nice. Yeah.
I mean, the first to do it was, of course, Ryan Giggs, yeah, lifting his shirt up and spinning it around his head with his very, very hairy chest. Yeah, yeah, fur.
I think he certainly did the spin, didn't he? He got that all right. I was thinking actually about ladies' examples, just to throw one of those in as well. And I loved, and we saw that firsthand. Do you remember when Lucy Bronze scored that absolute pearler in the World Cup last summer? She is very good friends with Jordan Nobbs, and they had this little hand technique. And they did it in front of the world's audience at the World Cup after an absolute beauty was scored from the right foot of Lucy Bronze. Mm. You can't deny that this is a great celebration. It's been replayed over and over. And it wasn't just an easy one, too. There was like 3-4 different 5 manoeuvres to it. Wow. So I'm gonna highlight that. However, one that stands out in memory, and this was all just before the speculation of him moving to the Premier League or potentially to Bayern Munich, Marco Reus at Borussia Dortmund, he had 3 goal celebrations in a row because there was all this speculation in the German press. And there's a little saying, isn't there? Hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. Mm. And that's related to the 3 wise monkeys. And that was the 3 celebrations that he did in a row. It has to be very well thought out. Can you imagine if you didn't score that 3rd one, you didn't get to complete your 3? It makes me think that he's capable of doing it all the time, but decides not to sometimes. Yeah, if I fancy it. So that was one of them.
Do you know why he did it?
No,
it was a bet.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Apparently someone bet him to do it. And again, he's the kind of player that would just make sure that that bet was carefully fulfilled. Do you know what I mean? Like so German, on point, consecutive games, bam, bam, bam. Thank you very much.
I'm also going to give one more example, and this is a Craig Bellamy one. This is a bit of a bet as well, actually. There was a bet involved. Now, Craig Bellamy had been in trouble when he was at Liverpool because he chased John Arnarisa with a golf club in training, and that was going into a really big game.
He didn't just chase him. It was quite aggressive.
It was pretty aggressive. He got in quite a lot of trouble, didn't he? But seeing the funny side, or certainly taking the bet, when there was a goal against Barcelona, he goes towards the sideline and recreates the golf swing. Everyone will remember. So the golf swing, the inspiration behind that being him running after Arnarisa with a golf club.
It's like the Fowler one, isn't it? You know, the papers make a huge deal out of something. It's in the press, loads of bad headlines. So what does the player do? Not only does he answer a bet, but he also says, do you know what? Thank you very much. I'm going to knock this right back at you.
Which actually is exactly what Wayne Rooney did in the punching situation when it was blown out of proportion, a party he'd gone to. I think it was at Phil Bardsley's house, or it was involving Phil Bardsley. And you'd seen, I don't know, he probably Snapchatted somebody in the room, one of the other teammates or a friend. Phil Bardsley punched Wayne Rooney and he fell to the ground, and it was all supposed to be a bit of a joke. And the papers had built it up, you know, former teammate knocks out Man United star striker. And actually, he didn't hurt him at all. It was all just a bit of a joke. And in the game, when he next did score, he kind of went to the ground as if he'd been punched, which was quite funny.
We're talking about Manchester United and simulations. Louis van Gaal, he could turn his career around for the sake of a dummy fall. Yeah. It was so funny. It was so unexpected. I mean, this is the guy who's Velcroed to his seat for most of the game. Yeah.
But normally, we were kind of lambasting players who go down, you know. For once, we can actually enjoy it, appreciate it, and actually love it. Now, there's a team in Iceland Stjarnan FC and a famous catch-a-fish goal celebration. A couple of people mentioned this to me on Twitter and I was like, hold on a minute, I think I remember this. And this team must get together on dark evenings and just come up with these famous celebrations. And apparently it's a really, obviously, they've said actually it helped us come together as a team because we'd all get together as a whole team and practice the celebration. They became quite famous for it. They have done some very elaborate goal celebrations. They've done ballroom dancing where they all teamed up with partners and danced in one half, which was very weird. And they've done a march to the band routine and they all had different instruments and marched up back to the halfway point. It was absolutely great. So a winning goal was celebrated in style. One of their players, Bjornsson, cast an imaginary fishing line. So this is you shimmying up, hoping to, you know, reel in your catch, Lindsay. Yeah. But the prize catch was one of his teammates who kind of jerks and jumps across and does like a salmon-like body pop across the pitch and comes back to his mate, and then everybody comes together to celebrate the catch, and then one of the players swings round and takes an imaginary photograph, so mimics all of that, you know, a picture to remember. It's very weird, but it's actually quite fun. It's really good.
Let's continue with a few more goal celebrations. Harry Kane. I like Harry Kane as a player, and I like Alan Shearer, you know, despite the fact he does send me to sleep sometimes with his interesting analysis post-match. His goal celebrations, he was famed for those. And when he interviewed Harry Kane and said, look, why haven't you got a goal celebration, Harry? Harry Kane said, well, how about I nick yours? And Shearer's like, okay. So Harry Kane, when he scored against San Marino, then nicked Shearer's famous one arm aloft goal celebration. He's now adopted that one. Some more, perhaps, interesting goal celebrations. Luis Suarez, he does that Hulk thing. And the reason why, we're talking about why people are inspired to make these crazy goal celebrations, is he said, you know, look, I wanted to do something for my daughter. My daughter's into princesses, but I couldn't very well do a goal celebration around that. And I'm thinking to myself, yes, you can, Louis. Why not?
And it's also because someone said, if you're going to take movie inspiration, Louis, no longer can you take Jaws.
Yes. So he does this Hulk for his daughter because his daughter likes Hulk and Spider-Man. But I challenge you, Luis Suarez, tap into your daughter's love of princesses and into your own inner princess self, please. And we'd like a goal celebration based around princesses or Barbie or My Little Pony or something really girly, yeah? Do you reckon?
Could become Elsa and just freeze on the spot.
Yes. I like it. Very good. Jürgen Klinsmann, Italia 90, accused of being a massive diver. What does he do when he goes to Spurs? 4 or 5 years later, he scores and has a diving celebration, which he becomes known for. God knows how many teenage kids and young kids winded themselves trying to emulate Klinsmann's famous Spurs celebration. I bet quite a few suffered in their back gardens trying to emulate that.
Eric Cantona with the stare, that was one of the suggestions. Peter Crouch, as we know, with the robot and his famous dance. All you have to say is the robot, and now it's associated with Peter Crouch. There was the Balotelli and the Why Always Me t-shirt. The Phil Brown, of course, with Jimmy Bullard and giving the team talk to the Hull players. Francesco Totti turned around and took a selfie. How very modern of one of the kind of old-fashioned greats. Some of the other suggestions we had, Facundo Sava and his mask. Yes. And I remember this and I looked into it and I was like, but why? We still don't know why. However, it was the mask of Zorro, but we don't know why it was the mask of Zorro. But he said once he did that, he scored a first goal in a 3-1 win over Birmingham. That was in the FA Cup third round. Pulled out this mask, which I think he had tucked down between his shin pad and his sock.
In the end, doesn't he? Yeah. Seven.
Because he said once he did that, he had fans sending him a variety of masks to the training ground. He said at one point, he said, I ended up with 250 of them. He said the question at every match was, which mask will he wear this time? There was the actual mask from the mask as well. Yeah. He got some scary Halloween type masks, which he said he didn't want to wear in case he, you know, scared the kids. But of course, he had to make sure he scored a goal to don one of these masks.
Well, I think if this is the first time we should try a 7 degree of separation. We've got quite a lot of listeners now to this podcast. We went over 300,000 last summer. So there must be someone who listens to this, who downloads, who knows someone who knows him. And we can work out why. I just want us to be tweeted, to be told why there was the Mask of Zorro thing. So at Offside Rule Pod, if anyone can find this out from the player himself.
There's quite a lot of others that we've had tweeted in. Tamuri Ketsbaya trying to destroy St James's. He ripped off his shirt, he pulls his boots off and starts whacking them against the advertising hoarding. He just said, I was just so passionate. He said, but I realise it's not a normal celebration. He said, I was not happy to be not playing. I'd come off the bench, I'd scored the goal, and it was basically me showing everyone I could score goals and I deserved to be playing. Very weird. But yes, thank you everyone who did tweet us as well. So if you're listening and you tweeted, it is much, much appreciated.
I'm Gary Neville and you're listening to The Offside Rule.
What wasn't appreciated was a golden goal. For many years, people absolutely hated it. That's right, the Capital One Cup went to extra time, but there was no such thing as golden goal. There'll be many people who are not even old enough to know what golden goal is, just thinking, oh, you spray a ball gold and you play it in a fight. I don't know. What the heck is this? So we're going to give you examples of famous games that were settled by famous golden goals.
Do you know the year it was abolished?
2006.
Oh, yeah. 2004 is when it started being phased out. That's crazy because I feel like I remember it like it was yesterday. I've got to go for the most famous example, really. So it doesn't get any bigger than Italy versus France in a European final. This was at the championships in the year 2000 between Italy and France. Italy had gone 1-0 up in the second half. They had to wait until the dying moments of injury time for Sylvain Wiltord to equalise. Took it into golden goal territory, into extra time. And you may remember David Trezeguet. I used to love him. Yeah. Robert Perez played the ball back to him, cut it back, smashed it in. France, European champions. Doesn't get any bigger golden goal than that.
Certainly doesn't. I've got two favourite ones, but I'm going to go in with the Liverpool one first because I'm a Liverpool fan, but also because golden goal I can completely appreciate. You know, it is drama all the way. And it's not necessarily drama that you want, of course, if you don't favour well on the receiving end of it. But when I talk about golden goals, I can't resist it. I have to speak about the finals of the 2001 UEFA Cup in Dortmund, where Gerard Houllier's Liverpool team met Alaves. Look, Liverpool were 2-0, 3-1 and 4-1 up against Alaves. But the Spanish team, they just didn't want to lie down. And the goals kept coming back in the other direction. Full-time ended 4-4, thanks to an equaliser from Jordi Cruyff. Game went into extra time, of course, in the time of golden goals. But two of Alaves' players were sent off. So you've got all this drama tic-tacking back with goals. Then two Alaves players get sent off in extra time. And really unfortunately, Delphi Gelly inadvertently turned the ball into his own net, scoring an own goal, sending... of course, that trophy in Liverpool's direction. So how awful. Not only do you go out via a golden goal, but it's an own goal at the same time. Yeah. That's where the golden goal is horrible. But of course, if you're a Liverpool fan, I mean, you've been through this amazing match where we've seemed to be in control, but then our opponent doesn't let us get away with it right until the dying moments there in extra time. But yeah, it was a great trophy to win that one.
Well, this is the first ever golden goal in international football, and it meant that Germany won the Euros in 1996, and this huge rivalry between the two finalists. So it was between Germany and the Czech Republic. It was a rematch, actually, from 1976, which was a final between West Germany and Czechoslovakia. Czechoslovakia won on that occasion. The final was actually at Wembley. So it was a golden goal, the first ever one, scored at Wembley. Both sides had met in the group stages. Germany were completely dominant. They beat the Czech Republic 2-0. The Czechs, however, were awarded a penalty on the 60th minute, or 59th minute, apologies. Patrick Berger successfully converted that. He went ahead. Germany equalised, though. Oliver Bierhoff, he got the goal that got them to extra time. And it was then, in the 95th minute, that Bierhoff scored that first ever golden goal. And it meant that Germany won Euros in 1996. Mm. I kind of half remember it. I should remember it, the fact that the final was, of course, in London.
Yeah, I mean, it was the first big football tournament for me that got me really into football. And obviously, I watched that great England-Holland game. So I remember so many of those matches in real finite detail because I was working in a shoe shop at the time. Catch this. And when I wasn't, I managed to watch two games in that tournament live at Wembley, which was brilliant. But I always remember coming coming home from this shoe shop. I used to finish about 7, and on my walk home, I used to live not that far from Wembley, and it was a hot, balmy summer. And I'd walk home, and I would hear the Wembley crowds as I was walking back to my house. It was just, it's just such brilliant memories.
So there we have it. It's very good to be back. Thank you very much for listening. You can, of course, go to our Twitter handle, at Offside Rule Pod. You've got the website as well. Great columns, blogs, really good ref watch. We've got Carly Telford, of course, who's writing for us as well. So many features there, so you can keep up to date with us if you don't have chance to listen in. But of course, we wouldn't forgive you if you didn't listen in as well. This has been brought to you by Continental Tires, getting you to the game safely. Thank you very much, and we'll speak to you next time.
The Offside Rule, We Get It, is brought to you by Continental Tires.